Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson. How are you, brother?
I'm questioning something.
What are you questioning?
Do you think it's time to change the canned intro to something new?
Man, I don't know. Can old dogs learn new tricks?
Well, I mean,
what do you want me to change it to?
At some point, you're going to become Dr. Jared Wilson. You're going to have to change it at that point. So it's, you know, it's like the church bylaws. When you need to change one little thing, do we change all of that?
I'm Dr. Jared Wilson. I wouldn't say that.
I mean, you worked hard for it. Might as well say it.
I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
But there could
When I become a doctor, you can say that.
Okay. There may be a point where I'm not assistant professor.
Okay.
Right? I don't know what the year mark is. That's what that means. Some people think assistant professor means you're assisting a professor.
So it's like 5 years?
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah.
I wonder if it has to do with faculty election.
Okay.
I don't know, because I've been teaching 5 years already.
Okay.
So, but yeah, it's kind of like, it's like the white belt professor. Yeah. It's the entry level professor. And then at some point you become associate professor, which I always laugh like when we had assistant pastors and associate pastors. And they're like, what's
the same thing.
But there is a level, it's a level of tenure, I think, or a level of.
And a little pay bump, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But at some point, I would hope. At some point, you become an associate. So at some point, I'm going to have to change it to say associate professor.
So that's why I'm thinking, if that's the case.
Yeah.
Let's just make some changes. Let's just...
You want to start now?
Maybe you could
do the intro.
Whoa.
How would you start the podcast? Let's hear it.
If you haven't left a review, get off this podcast.
That's how you would introduce the podcast.
That's it. I would start with that. If you're a freeloader, this is not for you.
Not for freeloaders. These are for review.
Disclaimer.
If we said this was only for review leavers, our numbers would drop.
We could change accents.
We'd go from 60,000 a month to...
You could do the Scottish accent. I do the kind of Texan accent or something. Switch it around. I don't know. I'm the type of guy that's like, if you're going to make a little change, let's make it all different.
Okay. All right. I'll rethink it. Yeah. If I have to tweak it at all,
which
associate or whatever.
I definitely think you should do Dr. Jared Wilson, associate professor. That's okay. The higher ups need to make some changes.
In that way.
Hey, do you know what would be really cool?
What?
If you said Dr. Jared Wilson, associate professor, author in residence. I'm here with my colleague, friend who is also a professor.
Oh, all right.
So if you're higher up, feel free to promote Jared.
Is this you putting in an application?
It's been a little application in there. I'll be the assistant. You be the associate.
Well, I could add in your title.
Oh, it's a very long title.
Instead of saying my friend, my colleague, my co-host, I could say.
The title's ridiculous.
But your title's always, it feels like you're in a different job every year or something.
Student success advisor for on-campus graduate students.
I'm not saying all of that.
Ministry placement coordinator.
I used to say advisor to the stars or something.
And family RE.
That's a lot of stuff.
Well,
you got to pick one because like I could say professor, pastor, writer, speaker. Like I could say all that too, but I don't. I just say what I am here.
You could just say advisor.
But you're all those things here, so that doesn't get rid of that.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't get rid of that.
But advisor doesn't say anything. People don't know what that means.
Consultant. When you say the word consultant, everyone's like, ooh, what do they consult on?
Yeah, I don't know. Speaking of consulting, we want to consult singles on how to navigate. We're going to be your relationship consultants.
Oh, I don't like that.
No, the working title for this episode, whether it be the published title, remains to be seen. But my working title is thinking about the church as a singles mixer. Do you have that phrase back?
Singles mixer.
Singles mixer. I want to talk about not the way most of, you know, podcasts or other things that talk about singleness in the church. They tend to talk about like it's like a theology of singleness or, you know, whether you pursue marriage or not. I kind of want to talk about that, but not totally. I want to talk about the singles that are looking for relationships and why is it so hard? I don't know if you're hearing this, but anecdotally, we are hearing over and over again how difficult it is. We've had a few singles in our church who have found each other in our church and have married in our church. In fact, a young man who even this morning came to meet us because his wife left a baby item at our home this last weekend and he was coming to pick that up. They met in our church, got married, have had their first child. We have a few of those stories, but by and large, I think I haven't run the numbers. Many of the singles in our church who get married tend to be marrying someone outside of our church, despite the fact that there are probably an equal number of singles of
you could also sex. Say you could also transfer this into the seminary world as well.
Okay,
the seminary can also be a singles mixer, okay. And again, I would say generally speaking, it would be roughly the same kind of numbers that it is out with off the seminary that they would generally find a spouse.
So let's talk about that first. Why this is something I just want to point our readers to an article from Tim Challies. Back in February, this was in February 5th, 2025, you can probably find it by the title of the article, which is Lots of Single Christians, But Few Weddings. Mm. Lots of Single Christians, But Few Weddings. And in that article, Challies is mainly talking about why young Christians are putting off marriage, why they're waiting longer, which is an issue unto itself. But so I kind of want to talk about that. But I think a related or just maybe an issue within that issue is single Christians in the church who, for whatever reason, aren't finding in that church someone that they want to be in a relationship with or that they want to marry, or the other person doesn't return those, those feelings. Yeah. And this is something that I think anecdotally we have had to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think let me start here that I think one of the things that seems to be a commonality for those who don't end up getting married or are currently in this season of singleness is a very high standard of what they're looking for. And Challies in his article calls this the soulmate myth, that there is like one person. And therefore, what you're kind of doing is you're saying, like, here's the standard I'm looking for, and I'll know it because that will be my soulmate. And the standards can be at times pretty extreme. And I think it's part of the, if one is single for a period of time, you can go into a world of dreaming. Like, what would my perfect spouse look like? What would the perfect life as a married individual look like? And the longer you dream on that, what tends to happen is the more things you add to that. You know, they need to be able to cook. They need to be a good conversationalist. They need to be driven, or I would prefer someone not as driven, you know, someone to take the lead or not to take his lead. And you begin to build this caricature of what you think is the soulmate myth. This person, if they appeared with all of these things, that's the one for me. Also, on the flip side, you know, maybe you are beginning to date someone, or maybe you go on a date or something like that. They don't have all the standards, so they can't be my soulmate. And so then the dating kind of stops, couple of dates. They didn't have this, or they weren't that. And a judgment is given really quickly based on this high standard, because there's this like fear they're not the one because they haven't met these standards. So I think one of the elements that I have seen in our church and other churches of certain and in the seminary is the need to deal with this standards. Like what would define a good spouse?
Yeah, so are you saying that more should be willing to, quote unquote, settle?
I would say—
lower their standards?
The phrase is lower their standards. Now, as soon as you hear that, you're like, oh, what do you mean lower standards? Which part should I lower? And I think it's one of those things, well, I think it is, in some sense, it's theological triage, you know, first importance, second importance, third importance. First importance, are they a believer in Christ? And are they clearly walking in faith? So like, number one, we're instructed in scripture to not yoke ourselves to an unbeliever. So like, first importance, are they a believer? Now, everything after that, we are not going to wait in the same way. And so I've definitely met with singles that have said to me, like, I could just tell after a few dates that they were not strong in their faith. They were not walking with the Lord. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now we're in a different conversation. But I met with a lot of singles. They seem to be a good Christian guy, good Christian girl. I just wasn't feeling it, you know?
Yeah.
That lowering of that standard, what I'm saying is you need to learn to love somebody as they are, not what you think you can either make them or what they could be in the future. So rather than having this caricature of what you think, but actually seeing the person in front of you. So they have to be able to cook. Well, what standard is that? As in, they have to cook every single meal they can possibly imagine. Or that actually has been really lovely. They've been able to cook me a couple of meals. I can cook a couple of dishes, do you know? Mm-hmm. So the standard is not perfection. The standard is more towards the, what are the things that you know you can mutually enjoy with somebody? And that does not mean that they have to be, quote, perfect in that. For instance, here's one I heard just recently from a single. I could only date somebody that is very healthy and takes care of themselves. Well, what does that mean? because I take care of myself, but I'm probably not healthy in terms of, you know, the things I drink and things like that. Are you talking that you need a gym bro or you need, you know, someone in sports? Someone can be incredibly healthy, but actually it doesn't take a lot to take care of themselves. Or someone can be over consumption of sports. We've just had a podcast on that. So defining the I could only date someone that is healthy, what happens if they're in a season they're dealing with a disease that they're having to walk through? You're never going to date someone that could be sick. So I think it's lowering unrealistic standards outwith of one's faith.
Yeah. In that article, again, it's called Lots of Single Christians But Few Weddings, Challies writes, from what I have observed, young women may not be a whole lot more eager to marry than young men. He's responding to another article, which I you can go to his to figure out what that is. Responding to another article that apparently is about young women wanting to be married and young men not pursuing marriage. And that article, in Challies' perspective, was putting the weight more on men about delayed weddings. And so what he says, from what I have observed, young women may not be a whole lot more eager to marry than young men, at least to marry the young men who are available to them. Hence, both young men and young women in our churches apparently want to be married, but in many cases, they don't seem to want to be married to one another, which is kind of what I wanted to talk about. He says, if you speak to the men, they're likely to place responsibility on the women, i.e., they won't accept our advances, while the women are likely to place responsibility on the men, i.e., suitable men won't ask us out. So here's something. I think this is related to your point, which is as we think about, you know, the other half, the potential partner, what I have observed is they're putting the weight on the other partner, and some folks are not, they're more concerned about someone else being suitable than they are becoming marriageable material themselves.
Yes.
And I'm just going to say it. I see this in a lot of young single men.
Yes.
Who are demoralized and depressed about how no women will say yes to their thing. And I want to say, have you thought about working on your life?
Yep.
Yep. Rather than moping around and getting into porn and being some sad sack about how life is going for you.
Yep.
Have you thought about taking some responsibility and becoming a marriable guy, becoming a guy that women do want to say yes to, rather than just, they don't like me, they don't get me, no one will show grace to me.
Like a wounded spirit type thing.
You know, take some initiative to become a marriable person. And I think this is true for women and men. Yeah. If you're, and it could be you're in a church where, man, you were dealt a bad hand. There just isn't anyone suitable for you. But have you thought about becoming, a suitable person yourself, like really pursuing that?
It definitely talks into the standards, because what we tend to do is the tiny speck that we are seeing in others when actually we ourselves are the massive log. Yeah, exactly. And I also think it's we'll hold others to those standards, but not necessarily ourselves. So, you know, I need a godly woman who's going to want to open scripture every morning. And you think, well, when was the last time you did that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's that I agree. It's that as you look to the other, the stakes are so high for them, but so low for you.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think this is more on the younger men's side. I think generally the younger women I've seen are preparing themselves for marriage, but the slight problem that they're facing is that the longer they're single, the more independent they become, and actually the harder they find a guy coming into their life, kind of ruining everything of their plans type thing. But the guys, I mean, just as you said, I can literally think of five guys on the top of my mind right now.
Why don't you name them? Tell us.
Let's not do that. Where all I want to do is grab them by their shoulders and shake them and go, like, stop being an idiot. Like, it's so obvious the things in your life. You're mopey. You're miserable. You're not pursuing the Lord. You're not driven in any form of way.
When you dig a little deep, you discover that it's hard to find a guy who's not struggling with pornography.
Yep. And even just, I met with a guy just last week who openly said to me, it's been a battle. I'm doing the very best. And one of the things I realized recently was, I'm single, I'm lonely, and who would want to marry me if I keep battling this? And like, he had finally got to the point where he's like, I'm done. Like, I want to move forward in my life. And you can tell I'm getting passionate about this, because I'm personally fed up counseling young guys.
Yeah.
Kind of going like, it's not rocket science, do you know? Love the Lord, love his people, love the lost, and you will be driven into a more maritable material, if you will. And I think also recently I've seen that these single guys, rather than taking that advice, what they'll switch that round to is, if only I'm married, then all that will improve. Mm. If I'm married, I won't be as grumpy. If I'm married, I won't have pornography issues. If I'm married, I'll train my body more so my wife can enjoy it. You know, marriage will complete all the issues you're seeing. And you're sitting there going, no, it won't. It's going to make it all worse.
Yeah.
Because actually, if you're spending your time trying to become that so your wife will be happy, you're still miserable because you're chasing something. So again, it comes back to the, you know, both of us got married. We didn't have long single lives. So there's a reality here mm-hmm. that, you know, we're talking about the experiences that we've seen in others. But I'll tell you this one thing that what I've noticed in our married life is that Miriam does not fulfill in me a complete life. I can't rely on her to make me better. Because if that's the way, the pressure I put on her is monumental.
Yeah.
And she will be crushed under that. Same the other way. And so I want to say to young guys, part of the reason the girls are not accepting your date offers is because, one, they're already seeing in you kind of like a miserable guy. And you're like, why would I want to spend time with that guy?
Yeah.
Do you know? And second, they feel the monumental pressure of, man, I'm going to have to carry him. I'm going to have to lead him. I'm going to have to keep guiding him. And honestly, there's a part of me that just wants to shake these guys by the shoulders and just like wake up from the stupor of this miserableness. Here's the thing though. It's the same on the girl side, but just a different subject matter. There's a lot of young girls on our campus, in our church and previous churches that we've served in, where there's clearly eligible guys who have started turning their life around. And they'll go things like, they've got pornography in their past. I'm not happy with that. Yeah, they struggled with weight in the past. They've had up and down faith with Christ. And they'll look at that and go, yeah, not for me. Because they're looking for this like perfect, well-rounded figure.
You're looking for Jesus.
And you're not going to find it. And so that's kind of where I want to kind of shake them and say, but don't you realize how beautiful it will be that this guy is on that journey and that he is continuing in that journey and you can be part of that journey together? Far rather be part of that together than sit on the sidelines pointing out all these faults, do you know?
Yeah, that's right.
You can sense my frustration.
You can be in the game or you can be sort of like observing and criticizing the game the whole time.
And I was counseling a young couple actually that they're dating now last week. And I said to them, man, I could have seen this happening like 4 years ago. It took you a while. And they both shared the exact same thing, which was as they looked at each other, neither of them felt that each other was good enough for each other. And it finally dawned on them one night in a very long conversation, they were both struggling with exactly the same things. And in some senses, the guy who's not pulling his life together and the girl who's looking for the perfect guy, they're both struggling with the same thing, which is the fear of, what happens if someone doesn't love me? And that's why the guy doesn't do anything, because he's like, if I do all of this and I'm still single, and then the girls go like, if I do all of this and then I don't get married or the marriage breaks up, the fear that they're running by. And there's just a part of me that I personally don't understand that. I met Miriam at 17. We got engaged at 17. We got married at 18. I was like, I'm all in. And if the Lord blesses this, he blesses this. That's pretty unusual, and I get that. But what do you say to like all of that?
Well, I want to talk about another, I think, exacerbating factor, or just something that I have observed. And I think this is a male and female issue. Mm. We have an entire generation now, two, I suppose, that have been raised on the internet.
Yeah,
and there was a time where the singles mixer. Perspective was you had to know how to carry a conversation. Guys, you had to learn how to interact with girls.
Yes.
And it was a little rough at first. You tease them, when you're on the playground, you're teasing them. But we just had, I think, in some ways healthier or at least routes. We had, tracks to run in to get healthier in our conversations mm-hmm. with each other, et cetera. I'm seeing an increase, it seems. Again, anecdotal, an increase, it seems, male and female, in kind of a social awkwardness.
Yeah, 100%.
Inability to carry conversations, to have in-depth conversations, not quite understand. I mean, men and women forever have struggled with understanding each other, right?
Yes.
But a failure to distinguish male and female.
Yeah.
I mean, all that plays into just a general social awkwardness yep. where we spend all of our time on these little screens and it's harder to approach. It's harder to yep. have conversation. It's harder to build relationship because we don't even know how to talk.
Yep. Yep. 100% agree. I see that all the time. Guys saying like, oh, I asked her on a date and she said no. Oh, how did you ask her? I text her. Go and speak to her, do you know?
Right.
But no, I do agree. I think COVID exacerbated that as yeah, well as yeah. we all retreated.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, we're in the most lonely nation now ever because we all retreated. But then when we came back together, we came back with all extra social media and things yeah. like that. I do agree. And this comes back to one of those things of often when we are single and looking to date, we're looking for a marriage partner. We're looking for a spouse. Something that as a dad of very young girls, I'm conscious that one day they'll be dating. One of the things that we've introduced to our household is concentrate on being friends. Be friends with somebody. If you're going to be married to this individual for the next 50 years, you better be able to talk with them right. and enjoy talking with them. Mm-hmm. And I remember that with Miriam and I dating. I just loved talking with her. You can kind of sense somebody that might be someone that could be a spouse in the future yeah. when you're just like, I don't want to hang up the phone. I don't want to finish this date. Yeah. I want to keep spending this time with you. And we're not talking about smothering one another with like 8-hour long dates. What we're talking about is just this sense of, when something happens in your life, what do you want to do? Do you want to post about it on social media? Or do you want to phone somebody and talk about it or meet someone for coffee? Just had a conversation with a young guy on Sunday. He immediately messaged me and said, hey, I want to talk more about this. Could we meet for coffee and talk more? I don't want to just text backwards and forwards. And this is a young guy wanting to progress in life. And again, just that learning to talk about it, learning to be open and getting rid of the awkwardness. I'll tell you this, I remember when I met Miriam and I wanted to go on a date, I was terrified of asking her to go on a date. Remember, I'm 17, no experience, no idea what I'm doing. I wanted to ask her to go on a date and she said yes. And then it dawned on me, I had no idea what that date is going to be. I just planned that she was going to say no. So I didn't know what was going to happen.
You hadn't thought through the plan.
I hadn't thought through the plan. But I'll tell you, if anyone's sitting out there going, oh, other guys just seem to be able to ask, other girls just seem to be able to be so comfortable. Trust me, we all struggle. I'm an extrovert of extrovert, and I still struggle to ask that question. It is normal to feel shy, to be nervous, because if you're not nervous in any form of way, you could be too lackadaisical about this. So almost lean into that. Be honest with it. I'm really nervous to ask you this question, but I would really like to spend time talking with you, going on a date with you, or even just, sadly, recently, we've watched a lot of young women that our family connected with have the boldness to say, I think this friendship might be going further, and actually be rejected in that conversation. And what it dawned on us when they were rejecting that conversation was the guys had never mentioned to them that they were not interested in a relationship, that they were good friends. Like, it was oblivious to them because they didn't know how to communicate. Yeah. They didn't know how to say, I just want you to know I'm not looking for a relationship. Yeah. You are a really good friend. They didn't know how to say that. So it felt like they were leading others on because they were just communicating really badly.
That may be a good segue into, I think, a complicating factor in why young men and women are not finding partners within the church, or at least not getting married within the church. Sometimes there's a fear of like, if this doesn't work out, we've still got to be brother and sister in this church. Like, I start dating somebody and then we break up, and then we got to figure out how are we both church members seeing each other every Sunday. And I know it's easier if the breakup isn't that difficult or what have you, but sometimes it's like, I don't want to ask somebody out here because if it doesn't work out, I've got to see them every week and we're going to be church members together.
Yep.
Is that a compounding factor for why people aren't dating within the church or finding their spouse within the church?
Maybe? Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think we've both seen this in places we've served, and I think it is a real risk. It is a real risk.
Yeah.
And I think that's where someone recently told me that we need to be thinking about, rather than what I can get out of a relationship or a friendship or a connection, rather what we can give to it. And so if we approach relationships slightly differently, so rather than like I gain pleasure from feeling joy out of the fact that this conversation went well, this date went well, and respond differently going, whether this becomes a marriage or not, I hope I'm leaving this person better than when I found them, when we connected. that might change the negative outcome a little bit. You know, if or this is not for us, well, at least I'm so glad I encourage you to, you know, be doing more daily Bible reading. I'm so encouraged that I was part of your life for that season. But it is a real risk, and it is one of those things of, I think this is where the church family need to come in quite a bit in trying to counsel to not harbor anger and frustration, but also not to harbor a fake love towards one another. Mm-hmm. We broke up, but, you know, we're the same church, so we should still sit next to each other. Do you know, actually, there can, you can have that awkwardness for a season. It will pass. That awkwardness will pass. But again, it comes back to, if you see that individual date somebody else, get engaged, get married, have families, move on with their life, do jobs, and you're harboring bitterness towards them, like, that's not their fault. That's on you, that you're not seeing a brother or a sister and going, right on, I'm so glad the Lord's using you. It still slightly pains me that wasn't me, but I know the Lord is going to bless this individual. So I agree. I think it is a risk. Is it enough of a risk not to do it, though?
No, I don't think so. But it is something to consider. And I think it's for people like in our position and for pastors, if they're bemoaning, you know, that it's not happening, you need to at least consider that as well, that may be a fear that's complicating things. I had a friend in Vermont who, he was a pastor. He was a single pastor, a young man. I mean, he was in his, I want to guess, late 20s, probably. Desired marriage. You know, he didn't go in thinking, I'm going to be single forever. But he would not date within his congregation, and I affirmed that decision on his behalf, despite the fact that he had, you know, number of families with young daughters that they were always trying to, you know, oh, my daughter could marry the pastor, and trying to set him up, and he would in some ways disappoint a lot of families and couples in his church because he had this rule of, like, if I'm dating somebody, I mean, it's just, there's so many ways that can go wrong. It's obviously lower stakes if you're not the pastor, a single pastor. But it's still kind of a thing. It's like the stakes feel high. If it doesn't work out, I still got to be in membership with this person, or, you know, they're going to know things about me, you know, maybe as a relationship progresses, that, and then they're going to be around, you know, and they're going to know, you know, my biggest failings and flaws and those. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many ways that can go wrong. One thing I also see, and this is less of a thing, but it's still kind of a thing, is young men who fixate, and I don't know if it's out of a pursuit or if it's out of, they've received coaching somewhere, even if it's just from the culture of, like, don't take no for an answer. And I know some women maybe are like this, but anecdotally, it feels like there are more younger men who they're pursuing that girl.
Yeah.
And that girl has said, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And the young man has thought, I can make him interested. I'm not giving up because I'm not a take a no for an answer kind of guy. And it becomes kind of creepy.
Yep.
I just want to say to young men who are like that, don't do that.
Yeah. I think there's room for backing off and then in the future saying,
if the relationship develops in a way,
have you reconsidered
through friendship,
this?
Through the community?
But if you're getting a no again, it's hear that. And
we've had to even say to some young men, hey, you need to lay off of her because we don't want her to be in a position like she doesn't want to come to church.
Yeah,
exactly. Because every time she comes to church, you're like up on, you know, under her nose. And that's uncomfortable for her. You're making her uncomfortable. So you need to stop doing that.
We definitely have to coach that at the seminary because we've got like 500-600 guys, maybe 100 women in terms of studying, usually undergraduate, and having to say, like, would you stop looking at them as constant potential dates and see that this is a sister in Christ studying quite often to go into missions or biblical counseling or just for personal edification. And if a friendship, if a connection blossoms, great, communicate, have a conversation. But if that's not there, stop kind of being creepy. And what you tend to find is that creepiness moves into social media, texting, emailing, and kind of bombardment on that side. Mm-hmm. Just kind of coming to kind of the church thought. So we've talked about singles and how they approach. Two kind of councils, if you are listening to this and you're married, there's a couple of things you can do to actually be involved in this process. So number one, as a family, we do these two things and we found that they've been really helpful. Number one, be a place where single people can come to you and ask questions. So we've had situations where, you know, a girl's come and said, look, you know this guy, is there any red flags, anything I should know about? Or a guy saying, like, I'm really interested in this girl. I don't really know how to approach it. and be an individual that can say, I'm so grateful you've said this, and we'll walk this journey with you. I know that she likes this, he likes that. Oh, I don't know about that. You know, like give some gentle advice. And we've had situations where couples have been getting close to engagement and both have independently come to my wife and I and said like, okay, I can sense we're getting towards engagement. I'm nervous, I'm worried. Can you counsel me on these things? And that's been a real blessing as a married couple to have an open door, an open heart to be able to help singles. And that also means you're going to be there when it's really hard, when they feel lonely.
Yeah.
We've had singles message us and say, I just feel alone today. Can I be at your house? You're like, 100%. I want you to be able to see our home as a place where you can live out this journey of singleness and dating and engagement, and we can be part of that with you. Second thing is, and Miriam struggles with this a little bit, multiple couples have met at our house and have started dating through being in our home and being at events. One of the things you can do is not like, oh, that's a single person, that's a single person, let's host something. But host things in your home and allow people to meet each other. If you're a good conversationist, lead that conversation. Miriam and I talk a lot. We lead conversations. And what we'll do is we'll say things like, so, you know, so-and-so, what's your background? Tell us your testimony. And we'll do like, you've got 5 minutes to tell us your story. You know, I heard you changed jobs. Tell us about that. And what we're really doing is bringing out into the forefront people's lives, sharing that community together. And therefore, the awkward conversations disappear a little bit because suddenly we know each other's stories and backgrounds and it clicks. Oh, you know, he likes that, she likes that, you know, and it's helpful. And what we have found is relationships do spring up. And what I will say is we're currently 3 for 3 in the last kind of couple of years of singles coming together,
Ferguson
dating.
Matchmaking service.
Yeah, exactly. But no, genuinely, don't be creepy and weird about it, but be a married couple, a family.
Yeah.
I mean, our kids even spot it now, and our kids like to be, oh, did you see the two of them? And again, just saying to the kids, okay, that's a couple we want to be praying for, you know, seeing if that's going to be the Lord. So if you're listening to this and think, wow, I've just listened to a whole episode on singleness, this pertains to you as well if you're married, because you can really help singles in church. And there's been cases where I've even said to guys, would you figure out she likes you? Go and ask her out, you know?
Well, and this is why in some ways as fraught as finding your spouse in church can be, we just talked about all the ways it can be fraught. It's also the safest place, the best place to find a spouse. Certainly from that other side of, hey, I think I'm interested in this person, and the others around you can go, I might would hold off, or I might would slow down because the brothers or the pastors know the things that they're struggling with that that would make them not prepared. But as you mentioned, on the positive side, to be able to say, you know, in community, whether it's a singles ministry or singles group or just the life of the church, marrieds and singles all interacting, and you see this brother or sister who is pursuing Christ and they're not perfect.
Yeah.
But in the context of the church, you can see how they care for widows and orphans, or you can see how they interact with little children, or you see how they just interact with their brothers or their sisters. And you think, you know, an attraction grows through proximity and seeing different facets to a person.
Yeah.
Or even being able to say to somebody, hey, have you considered so and so? You know? My mom is a twin. Mm-hmm. When they were in youth group, my dad was interested in my aunt, right? And my mom's twin sister.
Yeah.
And my mom's twin sister was not interested in him. And he went to their older sister, my aunt Coyleen, who was in some way like a youth leader. She was quite a bit older than them, or, you know, a fair amount, you know, older than them. So she was kind of a leader. And my dad went to my aunt Coyleen for advice. I really like Sharon, and Sharon won't, you know. And my aunt Coyleen said, well, what about Karen?
Yeah.
And my dad thought, okay, I'll ask Karen out. And now they've been, you know, married for decades and decades and decades.
Yeah.
So we have the benefit of wiser and, older brothers and sisters who can say, hey, have you thought about so-and-so? Yeah. Or I think that's a good pursuit there. You
it
know?
Can also end something as well, because we've had someone's asked, like I've said to someone, hey, have you thought about this person? And they're like, I have. And it's a no, we just don't click. That means quietly we've been able to go to the other person and say, I know you're kind of interested, but but they're not really available
run the interference for you.
So in some senses, you're protecting them a little bit from the harsher realities.
Yeah. So here's kind of a final directive. I just think in all of these things, it's true for all of us. But as you think about that person that you're interested in, not pursuing them out of some desire to gratify your own desire for marriage or your own standards, as Ross was pointing out earlier, where we have such a high standard and we're not going to settle, et cetera. Let's think about the other person this way. Romans 15:2, let each of us please his neighbor for his good to build him up. How can you pursue dating if you're a single person or courtship or engagement or marriage in such a way that you're desiring the best for the other person? Not that they would complete you, satisfy you, solve all your issues, but how can you pursue in such a way that you want to serve them, pursue their Christ-likeness, et cetera. And I think if we all did that, of course, we would see Christ be bigger in each of our churches. If you enjoy the podcast, dear listener, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.